We've been entirely focused on growth and development, and growth is important. But when growth becomes very unequal, when it results in huge disparities, eventually there's going to be a backlash. And that's what we are experiencing right now.
Welcome to Vox Dev Talks. My name is Tim Phillips. It's 2 years since Vox Dev launched, and that's been a period of rapid global change in economics and politics. So to mark our second birthday, we're asking some of the economists and policymakers who see and influence these changes about the economic events that are having an impact on developing countries. And that's why I'm joined today by someone who has also experienced change in the last 2 years. In April 2018, Penny Goldberg of Yale was appointed chief economist at the World Bank. Penny, welcome to Vox Dev Talks.
Hello.
What do you think, Penny, has been the most important economic event for developing countries in these last 2 years?
I would say the most important development has been the tendency we see in many advanced economies to turn inward. And what I mean by that is the closing of their borders. This takes different forms in different countries. So in the United States, the focus in the last 2 years has been on trade and the trade tensions and immigration as well. In Europe, it's mainly about immigration. In the United Kingdom, it's about immigration and trade. It's about Brexit. So it takes different forms, different manifestations in different countries. But I would say that the general tendency is for countries to focus much more on their domestic markets than on the global economy.
And where do you think these tendencies come from?
There's a variety of reasons. I would say there are two main trends, which may seem contradictory at first. So on one hand, we experience a tremendous increase in inequality in most advanced economies. By inequality, I don't necessarily mean the Gini coefficient. I mean the general feeling that many people have, that they were left out, that they did not participate in the gains from globalization. And this group sent a very strong message, namely, let's take it more slowly. Not necessarily stop globalization, but let's take it more slowly. Let's take a break. Let's reassess where we are and make sure we give our countries enough time to adjust. So that's the one trend, and that has naturally led many policymakers to focus more on their own countries and on those segments of the population than on the global economy. At the same time, I think we also have a very different sentiment among companies, among firms, the business sector, that feels that globalization has not gone far enough. So in some sense, it's the opposite of the first one. So these groups claim that while in some sense, countries and markets have become more global, measurable trade barriers at an all-time low. We have very low tariffs, or at least we had very low tariffs until very recently. Despite all this, there are many other ways in which countries are still very segmented, and there are many different ways in which you can shield your own country from foreign competition without raising tariffs. And such people point out that competition has not always been fair, that not everyone plays by the rules, that the World Trade Organization has been ineffective in enforcing these rules. And so this voice would say that globalization has not gone far enough. It has not been as effective. There are whole sectors of the economy that are not liberalized yet. Think, for example, of services. While trade in goods has been liberalized, trade in services is still highly protected. These people again believe that given that globalization has not gone far enough, it may be time to take a break from what we've been doing so far and reassess it. So these two trends curiously meet to generate the current environment where there is demand for more protectionism in the end.
Economic history shows us that we've always had periods of protectionism. Do you think that this one is particularly important for the developing world?
It is important for the developing world because the developing world is finding itself at a very critical juncture. There are whole parts of the world that managed to escape poverty in the last 30 years because they were open, because they participated in trade. And I'm not thinking only of China here. I'm thinking of many countries in East Asia, Korea, more recently Vietnam, the Southeast Asian tigers, and so on. For these countries, this represents a step backwards, but perhaps more importantly, there are many other countries, many other developing countries that did not participate in this wave of liberalization. And for these countries, it's very questionable right now whether they can replicate the success that other countries experienced. There are many reasons for that. It's not just the current tensions. There are also technological developments, technological changes that make it harder. Automation comes to mind, artificial intelligence, and so on. But clearly, the backlash we're experiencing right now doesn't make it easier for developing countries to join the world trading system.
If these are popular and populist movements, how should policymakers respond to this?
I strongly believe that we should respect democracy. And what this means, in my view, is that at a minimum, we should take these concerns very seriously rather than dismissing them as being due to one particular person, one particular personality, or a misunderstanding of the world, or people simply not understanding what's best for them, and ask ourselves the question, why did we get here? And I do feel we got here precisely because we refused to accept until very recently that globalization had two sides. There were many segments, as I said earlier, that were left out, and these segments of the population are making themselves heard right now. So I think we need to take them seriously. Going forward, it's important, especially in developing countries, especially in those developing countries that are at the start of this process, to make sure that we don't repeat the mistakes of the past. And what I mean by that is for the last few decades, we've been entirely focused on growth and development, and growth is important. But when growth becomes very unequal, when it results in huge disparities, eventually there's going to be a backlash. And that's what we are experiencing right now. So I think going forward, it's important to make sure that growth is more balanced, that everyone gets to participate.
Your colleagues as academic economists, is there a role for them in investigating this side of globalization, looking at new things?
I think there is a very important role that research can play and actually has started playing it in the last few years. For a long time, I was one of those who complained that research, especially in the field of international economics, was very one-sided. And what I mean by that is that we were focused entirely on emphasizing the gains from trade. Not that we don't realize that trade or globalization don't result in distributional gains and losses, but it was a matter of division of labor, if you want. So trade economists focused on pointing out that there are gains from trade, partly because this is something that's not obvious to most people. So someone needs to say that. But at the same time, we left to other economists, mainly labor economists or more micro-oriented economists, to analyze the distributional consequences of trade, not just trade, immigration also. And as a result, I think to a certain extent, we lost our credibility when we refused to even talk about the issues that are in many people's minds these days. I do think that research would play a very important role by refocusing itself on those issues that are first order in the public's mind. And one of the main issues is the distributional consequences of globalization.
How should the World Bank be responding to this? How does it reframe what its goals are or what its activities are?
As you know, the World Bank is focused on low-income countries, maybe middle-income countries as well. But a lot of this backlash we're experiencing is going on in the advanced economies.
Yeah.
So these are outside the mandate of the World Bank. Still, the World Bank can make its views known and can take positions. But in general, we have no way of influencing policy in any country, but certainly not in advanced economies. That said, I do think the World Bank can play an important role in terms of pointing out what the consequences of the current climate are. We do find ourselves in a position where there is a lack of a vision about what the future of development is. So far, developing countries operate in an environment that was very open, that was very welcome to developing countries joining the world trading system. The world has always been less open to immigration, but nevertheless, many developing countries saw huge gains from immigration. We're at a point in time where we see the closing of the advanced world to developing countries, and that leads to the question, what is the advice we give to developing countries? What's the model, the new model of growth and development in such a world? That's a big challenge that the World Bank faces. That's the first part of my answer. The second part is, in those countries that are still growing very fast, like China and many East Asian economies, includes countries like India, in those countries we can actually try to learn from what has happened in the advanced part of the world. And what I mean by that, in many of these countries, we still view it as perfectly acceptable to have huge increases in inequality. They go hand in hand with growth. That's because the focus has always been on growth, and perhaps this should be the priority right now. But down the road, these huge disparities are eventually going to become a problem. We saw that happening in the United States. We saw that happening in Europe. Thinking ahead, we can try to preempt the backlash by making sure that the growth is inclusive, that the inequalities don't get out of hand.
When we look ahead another 2 years into the future, do you think that this retreat from globalization, this putting up of barriers, will have been something temporary, or do you think that the world's changing forever?
To be honest, if you had asked me this question 2 months ago, I would have said this is a temporary setback.
Yeah.
We're just taking a break, and maybe we need this break to catch our breath, and then we'll continue as in the past. Just to draw an analogy, I like to draw this analogy because there are many similarities between the two situations. In the late 80s, we were expressing many similar concerns with respect to Japan, and many predicting the end of the open trading system. What happened in the end is, rather than a collapse of the world trading system, we had the establishment of the World Trading Organization and a new wave of trade liberalizations, and then the hyper-globalization wave of the 90s and the 2000s. My initial take on the situation was that something similar might happen again. Given how the tensions have been escalating in the last few months, I'm not so sure. Mm-hmm. I don't have a crystal ball, so I cannot tell what is going to happen in the future. But I think it's also conceivable that we are at a tipping point and we are entering a very new era that is going to look very different from the past. It's still very early to say, but I would say that what happens also very much depends on the policy choices we make. It's not completely outside our control. It really depends on where we want to take this.
And those policy choices are really going to decide the future for the world's poorest people.
Absolutely. I do think that everything that's happening now is going to have very important consequences for people who live in the United States and in Europe. But the consequences are going to be much more severe for those who have very little right now.
Finally, Penny, what do you think has been the most important new piece of empirical evidence around development that you've seen recently?
There's a lot of great empirical work in development these days, but if I had to pick one area, and I'm saying area because it's not a single paper, it's a combination of papers. This is the evidence regarding mobility costs, how important mobility costs are, how little mobility there is, and how important geography is. And what I mean by that is, the premise in economics has always been that when people are hit with an adverse shock, they move to where the opportunity is. And that can mean a different sector of the economy. It can mean a different firm. It can mean a different region within their country. It can even mean a different country. We all know that it's not easy to move to a different country because there are immigration restrictions. A lot of what we are seeing right now has, in fact, to do with immigration. But we would expect that in those cases where there are no formal restrictions, people would be willing to move. So, for example, within their own country. So there has been a lot of evidence in the past 5 years, I would say, that suggests the opposite. And that has been a bit of a puzzle. People do move, but it takes a lot of time. Movement is very slow, often not in response to adverse shocks. And what this means is that if an area, if a particular region, if a community is hit with an adverse shock, it takes a very long time for this community to adjust. It very often enters a period of prolonged decline. Even if it does not decline in absolute terms, it may do less well than other parts of the country. And that in turn has very important implications, not just for economic well-being, but also for social services, for crime, for education, and of course for political outcomes. So this has been documented for the United States, for example, in the context of the import competition from China. But it was also documented for India, for Brazil, for Colombia, for Vietnam. There are important regional disparities which are very hard to reconcile with a model in which people move very fast in response to economic shocks. And just to preempt a reaction, people do move in my own country, in Greece. People did move in response to the crisis. People moved to Europe. But still, I would say the movement is too slow compared to the magnitude of the differences to the potential arbitrage opportunities.
Penny Goldberg, thank you.
Thank you.
This has been a Vox Dev Talk. You can find more of our episodes at voxdev.org, and don't forget to subscribe to Vox Dev Talks on your podcast platform.